Right next to the Robin Ray Foot Clinic is a little place we call Hobby Corner, where folks are invited to bring their collections of stuff whenever they're in New York and display it here for people passing through. Yes, would you come over here? Excuse me, sir.
Boy, my feet feel a lot better since I visited your foot clinic.
I'm glad you took advantage of our
all day.
Free foot clinic, sir. You are one of the hobbyists who's been here since Thursday evening, I think.
Oh, it's been like forever.
Have you had some... Well, you don't have to stay. You're not under any compulsion to stay here, you know.
Well, I thought we had to come and stay.
No, you come stay as long as you want.
Because
set up your display.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, there wasn't much doing. I set up Thursday afternoon and nobody came by or anything. And then they put out all the lights about 1 o'clock.
Well, of course, it closes down at night
here.
It was
lonely, very lonely. But then it picked up again the next day.
Sure, well, you got the wrong idea. The thing, you don't have to stay here all the time. Of course, it's only for you to display your hobby, which is what, sir?
I fill in all the O's and P's and B's on the front pages of newspapers.
And here on your little hobby table, you have displayed the New York Times, the Herald Tribune, the Journal American, I think that's the World Telegram.
Oh, that's the Memphis Commercial Appeal.
Oh, yes. And you have these from all over the country. You've saved these newspapers. How many do you have in all?
11,000 front pages with all the O's. With all the capital P's, capital B's, little B's.
How about little E's?
Little E's and Q's and the tops of I's.
Mm-hmm. Well, other members of your family, do they collect these things too?
Della does. Yeah,
that's your wife, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Della helps me. She does most of the little letters. I do most of the capital letters, and it's more fun to do capital letters because you have a larger space.
What plans do you have in the future? What are you going to do with all?
I'm going to use different colored ink. See, I've been using blue, and I'm going to switch now and maybe use green for 5 or 10 years.
Uh-huh.
And then after that...
Well, I guess our time is about up, and I certainly appreciate the time you've given us, and I know everybody here and those at the adjacent Free Foot Clinic. I have appreciated seeing your collection. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, too.
My best to Della. Hello, this is the Bob and Ray Banquet Corner. We're set up here at Ellen Wicker's Banquet and Other Facilities Hall, located in Hartford, Connecticut. Today we're going to hear a speech made by J.D. Balenwire, president of the Balenwire Thin Iron Fence Company. The occasion is prompted by the retirement of Bill Jester, an employee of the company. Now I see Mr. Balenwire is about ready.
We're here tonight to do honor to Bill Jester, a man who, in my opinion, is about to retire. I feel the same way. Bill Jester was more than just a man. He was an employee. And as such, he was entitled to the very best. And I know there are those among you who would say that Bill was more than a man and an employee. He was a human being, too. Moreover, he was a man who never shirked his responsibilities, but looked them squarely in the eye. And he was a grand guy. A man not easily forgotten. Not by many of us. And... so because you're all those things, Bill Jester, because your services are no longer required by the company, I would just like you to know that your ace is high with me, and you can have a handwritten reference for me anytime you want it. But right now, for services rendered to the company, I want you to have this watch. Take it.
Is it made out of gold?
Well, why don't you unwrap the box and find out? I think you'll be pleasantly surprised, Bill.
Okay, I'll look.
Well, Bill Jester, is it made out of gold?
No. What's more, it's not even running.
Let me look at it. Say, it isn't running at that, is it?
No, it looks to me like the stem was put in crooked. Why don't you try banging it on the floor? They start up that way sometimes.
I'd rather have you do that. That way, if it flies to pieces, I won't be responsible. Well, it certainly did fly apart, didn't it?
Now that it's all apart, I can see a picture in back of the case. Looks like somebody's mother. Yeah, that wasn't a new watch, was it?
Doesn't look like it, does it?
No. Well, what do we do now? Do I get a new gift to replace the old one?
I don't think so, Bill. And the crowd seems to be in agreement. You're always kind of careless with equipment. I suppose that's why you're being retired at the age of 23. Now, the best thing you can do is leave this hall in a hurry before the crowd becomes ugly. And don't bother to scrape the watch off the floor either. You never know who's going to retire next week.
I hope your taxi melts in the hot sun.
Get out.
Be with us again next week, ladies and gentlemen, for another banquet covering. And leave the weak sisters home. These banquets can be rough. Welcome now to Open Minded, the hard-hitting program that avoids no issue, and the topics discussed here are meant to stimulate the listener, thereby force him into the good citizenship needed to run a city of our size. No subject is taboo. We operate in the earnest climate of frank conversation. We'd advise the home listener to do the same. We have two panel members with us today, Mrs. Malvina Merrygrass of the Hudson School for Wayward Men, and Don Tankus, a writer for the Daily Trip, a vacation bulletin. I think we'll start things off today with Mrs. Merrygrass. Can you think of a frank and earnest subject, Mrs. Merrygrass?
Yes, I can.
And now, how about you, Mr. Tanker? Can you think of one?
No, and you know you can't force a thing like that. It's just something that has to come naturally.
Well, how come Mrs. Merrygrass can think of one?
Well, I don't know. I'd ask Mrs. Merrygrass this, though. Did she come here prepared to discuss a frank subject?
Mrs. Merrygrass?
Yes, I did.
Does that answer your question, Mr. Tanker?
Yes, it does, sir.
Well, maybe today's topic should be about divergent points of view, then. How'd that be?
Well, that's not such a frank subject, really.
Well, not calculated to shock, but so far the listener at home isn't being forced into good citizenship by the remarks you've already made, and that's the purpose of the program, really.
Well, I certainly came prepared to discuss a number of things that might be considered taboo.
I suppose can do that if they prepare for it.
What do you think of that, Mrs. Merrygrass?
Well, he's probably right. However, I would add this qualification. If someone is invited to a program such as this, I think they should be prepared to enter into frank and earnest discussion. And the clean, clinical air of honesty seems to be missing today.
I would ask Mrs. Merrygrass this question. Isn't there a good deal of impact of that which is left unsaid? And I would ask Mrs. Merrygrass still another question. She says that the clean, clinical air of honesty seems to be missing. Well, could that be true because I was honest enough to admit that I came unprepared?
Well, that's rather a loaded question, I'd say.
Well, no. In the interest of good citizenship, I have to ask you not to evade the question. If there's to be a better tomorrow, we've got to answer today, right?
Well, I wasn't impugning Mr. Tanker.
All right.
Well, I wasn't impugning Mr. Tanker's honesty. I simply made the point that he was unprepared for today's discussion.
And he was frank and honest enough to admit it. On the other hand, Mrs. Merrygrass, you've talked a good game about taboo subjects. You said you were prepared to discuss, but as yet I've heard nothing.
I'd look into her background if I were you.
Don't worry, I will.
Well, I've never heard of such a thing. I hold my reputation up for all to see it, and I'll stand or fall on it.
Listen to her whine, Bob.
Yeah. And so we bring to a close another session of Open Minded, and we hope that this hard-hitting program is an uplifting experience that many of you will become good citizens because of it. Thank you.
Sports fans, this is Beth Burns of the Bob and Ray staff in the sports room with another of my famous sports guests, the manager of the newly formed Sister Cities baseball team, which we'll probably be hearing a lot about this coming year. Manager Al Fezdeski. How are you, Al?
I'm just fine. Beth, and I want to thank you for inviting me up here to talk to you and to all your listeners.
Certainly a pleasure to have you here. The Sister Cities team looks pretty good this year, doesn't it, Al? Can you give us
a... Well, I don't want to make any predictions so early, except to say that I've been delighted with the way we have come around during spring training.
Uh-huh. You'll be playing in newly built Fogg Stadium, won't you?
That's right. That should help us, too, moving into the new stadium. Naturally, it'll give a lift to the club. And I'm sure that with the winds, the way they usually blow from left to right field, we're going to get a lot of foul balls up on the stands that way.
Well, now tell me, do any of the youngsters stand out that you'd like to talk about? Any of them look like they're going to be real comers this year?
Well, we have a young kid, Steve Cradlin, at shortstop. Now, he's got everything going for him. He got big hands. He can go to his left, go to his right. He can go into the hole. He can make the long throw. And he has big hands. I told you that.
Yeah.
And he's a good hitter. What I like about him is he can hit behind the runner.
That's good.
And get him around there. And I'll tell you this about Steve. He's a perfect gentleman on and off the field. Another thing, Hal Momaroff, our catcher, I think, is going to get his confidence back. He had his confidence shaken last year, you know.
I know he did, yeah.
He got hit in a squash.
I remember that.
With a fastball, you remember. Well, now we took some movies of Momaroff during training.
Uh-huh.
And we noticed that as the pitcher threw the ball, he was flinching at the bat. In other words, he was
a little gun-shy, so to speak.
Right. He was almost like he was praying up there.
Uh-huh.
And it was taking his mind off hitting the ball. So we showed him a movie, and he seems to be coming around. Now, with him batting in the fifth slot, with young Crowley coming around the way we hoped, there's no reason why we can't stay on the top of the second division this
Wonderful.
Year.
Wonderful. I certainly hope you do and want to wish you a lot of luck, Al Pazdeski, and maybe you have some advice for the kids before you go.
Well, I'd say that if they want to play ball, now's the time to do it, to play it every day. Play ball, play it honestly, play it fairly, play hard. They grow up.
Time is up here in the sports room. This is Jeff Burns with thanks to manager Al Pazdeski of the Sister Cities team. We'll be looking forward to seeing you this season. From Biff Burns, this is Biff Burns saying so long.
Let's see, this is refreshment time, judging by the attitude of our studio audience. They're all grasping for the little trays of refreshment that the ushers are passing out. Tony, what do they have to look forward to today? What are the folks going to get?
Well, Arthur, I don't know whether you'll approve of the menu I selected, Arthur.
Well, it's been all right in the past few weeks. You've picked out some pretty good stuff. As long as it's safe for all the folks, that's our big concern.
Well, we'll all get a paper cup filled with lentil soup.
What's that?
They'll all get the paper cup filled with lentil soup.
Lentil soup?
Paper cup filled
What's
with...
What's that, like beans, isn't it?
I believe so, Arthur.
Kind of soup I know is Mulligan's Pond.
They have Mulligan stew, paper cup filled.
That's with... good.
They also have a paper cup filled with oyster stew, Arthur. And a paper cup filled with clam chowder, Arthur.
Tony, how does it happen that all of the things that our folks get for refreshments this week fall in the soup line?
I don't know, Arthur. It probably was poor planning on my part.
Oh, holy smoke. These people can eat only so much soup, so we don't give them an awful lot of it, but four different kinds. It's going to be a soupy audience. They're pretty soupy anyway, looking at them. They seem to be enjoying it. Is that lentil soup?
Lentil soup, Arthur. Mulligan stew, oyster stew, and clam chowder.
What's the matter with chicken?
I don't know.
Forget about chicken.
Well, probably I did.
If you're going this far, you should have had that too. Well, it's too late now.
I'm awfully sorry about this, Arthur.
Oh, it's all right.
And the paper container filled with gin, too, Arthur.
Well, that's all edible as far as I can see. You folks just eat moderately. And enjoy yourselves. Remember to throw away the cup for your food. I think you're working for a paper cup concern, Tony.
Now it's book review time, and our literary editor, Webley Webster, is here and in another studio adjoining the Webley Webster Players to present a scene from the book to be reviewed. What is it this week?
Rally Round the Flag, boys, by Matt Tuttle.
Rally Round the Flag, boys. That's one that I haven't caught up with. I've heard it very highly recommended.
It's a very enjoyable book, and I loved it. I really do. Matter of fact, I only review the books I like. The ones I don't even book them.
Well, I think that's a good course to follow. There's no sense...
Why review something that, you know, for the birds?
For the what?
Birds.
Birds.
The birds.
All right, well, you do like this one, then, and I guess the players are all set. Incidentally, we got several letters from people wanting to know whether you write the dramatizations of these scenes from the book.
Yes, I do.
You take care of that.
I write everything, and the Webley Webster players are all set, waiting for my signal now to enact what I think is the highlight of the book.
The highlight from Rally Round the Flag, boys.
Right. The boat is about 6 days at sea.
The boat?
That's why.
Boy, this scene seems to crop up in so many stories. Unfortunately, I haven't read this, so I can't say that it doesn't happen.
Yes.
Just seems a coincidence, that's all.
It does, it does. All right, it's 5 or 6 days at sea when the matey burst into the captain's poop deck.
Yes, it's for me, Captain.
Why, you...
Oh, I deserved it, sir. I deserved it. Just trying to have a little squat with you,
Captain.
Give
a wrong steer to the good captain of this town. Why, you...
Taking it easy, sir.
Why, you knocked over my Chinese gong.
Someday, Captain... He ain't going to get away with it.
What did ye say?
Nothing, sir, nothing. What can I be doing for you?
I thought you said something about someday I won't get away with
it. Captain, look over there.
He ran out, the scalawag. I'll get him if it's the last thing I ever do.
Webb, they're not going to leave the story there, are they?
Well,
a real exciting scene for any book.
Isn't that an exciting turn?
From Max Dolman's Rally Round the Flag, boys, huh?
But why?
I'd like to hear the end of that, but I guess there's time today, huh? Okay, thank you.
I recommend it for everybody who loves high adventure and low comedy.
If you'd like to have Webley Webster review a book that you have written, won't you let us know?
And hello, this is Harvey Swenson welcoming you to Let's Take a Tour. Today we're visiting the Coil Skinny Road Sign Company, and with me is Mr. Warren Sarko, the foreman, who's going to explain the technical equipment as we go along. Now, what's this interesting tool here, Mr. Sarko?
Well, that's a hammer. It's the used drive-in nail, sir.
Well, now, Mr. Sarko, would you care to tell us what that group of men is doing over there?
You mean on the bench?
Yes.
They're having their lunch, Mr. Swenson. Now, the way they do that, the operation involved there is this. You see, the noontime whistle blows.
Now, what's that room over there, Mr. Sarko?
Now, that's the steak room. That's where the steaks are made.
And the road sign is clamped onto the steak, is that right?
No, the steak is clamped onto the road sign. Would you like to see one of the steaks, Mr. Swenson?
Oh, very much, sir. Something we're all interested in.
Well, right here, this is a typical steak here, without the road sign on it. It's 41 inches in length, and it's got a point at the bottom.
And that, of course, means that the roadside will stand 41 inches above the road. Is that right?
We have to drive the stake 8 inches into the ground.
Well, then, subtracting 8 inches from the stake, the sign will stand 33 inches above the ground.
Well, now you've got to take into consideration the sign itself. Now, it has height, too.
How much, here, Mr. Sarko? The
sign's 8 inches high.
Then the sign will stand 41 inches above the ground.
I suppose so. Say, Mr. Swenson, would you be interested in seeing our reject room? This pile full of signs that our machines ran off incorrectly.
All right. Is it that small room over there?
No, that's a boiler. It's over here, Mr. Swenson. And be careful not to step on any steak.
All right.
Oh,
too here.
Yes, I did. Now, let me pull one of these signs out.
Yeah.
Now, take a look at this one.
Thanks. It says speed limit 200 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm. The overhead printer went out of whack on that. It was supposed to read 20 miles an hour.
I see.
Now, take a look at this one, sir.
Well, this says sharp curve ahead. What's the curve, Mr.?
Well, it was supposed to have read sharp curve ahead. I typed that I got the axe for that one, I might point out. Incidentally, a good many copies of this particular sign got by the inspector here and were placed on quite a few roads, unfortunately.
No harm done, I hope.
Well, now you'd be surprised how many people stop and get out of their cars and walk on ahead just to see what a sharp curve was.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Well, thank you, Mr. Warren Sarko, for showing us around the Croyal Kenny Road Sign Company. It was informative and revealing, and it happened on Let's Take a Tour. We have with us today a lady who answered a newspaper advertisement. She's here to tell us about it, Miss Catherine Burris. I think we just have time for you, Miss Burris.
All right. Hello, Mr. Elliott. By the way, this is my first time to be behind the footlights.
Well, we don't have footlights here. They're used in legitimate theaters only.
Oh, is that where they're used?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that throws a different light on the situation. You walked right into that one, didn't you, Mr. Elliott? My, yes, you
Miss
did.
Burris, which newspaper ad did you answer? Would you tell
An ad which read, in essence, can you sing, do you have hidden talent, and things like that. Write us and let us know if you have any talent, and if you have, we'll help you develop your singing talent, or for that matter, any other kind of talent you may
well,
have.
You
well,
have
that was it, in essence.
Do you have a hidden talent, Miss Burris?
Well, I sing as well as Helen Going With.
Who's Helen Going With?
I don't know who Helen's going with. I haven't seen her recently. Oh, mercy, you fell for those. Maybe I should be an MC instead of a singer.
Did you send these people a letter telling them about your singing talent, Miss Burris?
Well, I thought sending just a letter would be insufficient, so I went to the Penny Arcade and made a recording of Old Johnny.
How did it come out? Was it good?
Well, it picked up the sounds of the rifle shots in the background, but I felt that these people would take the rifle noises into consideration and not pay any attention to
them. So you
sent
the record along to them, huh?
Well, I'm not afraid not. On my way out of the Penny Arcade, I accidentally stepped on the foot vibrator and the record flew about 30 feet into the air.
That's the record, huh?
Only the part that fell on the floor.
Oh.
Mercy, how you do set me up with those straight faces.
Straight lines, mister.
Well, whatever. At any rate, I said in my letter that I had a fine singing voice of the type that's so much in demand these days.
Well, did it take a long time before you got an answer back?
No, I got an answer from them the same day I mailed my letter, about 3 hours later.
What did they say?
Well, they said that my talent was being processed along with the talent of thousands of other applicants, and it'd be a long wait before they could judge my talent.
Well, that's kind of discouraging. How long did you have to wait till then?
Well, that evening I got a very special delivery, personalized letter from the president of the outfit.
Personalized?
Here's the letter. You can see where all those blank spaces are filled in with my name. That's personal, isn't it?
Yeah. I noticed the letter goes on to say that you have a fine, I see, bass and baritone have been crossed out, leaving soprano. You have a very fine soprano voice.
I certainly do.
And it adds that you can have the use of their recording studio for $700 an hour.
Mm.
Well, are you going to take advantage of their kind offer, Miss Burris, do you think?
No. And do you know why not, Mr. Elliott?
Why not?
Well, $700 is a little too high, even for a soprano. I declare, if you don't give me one of those straight laces again,
Straight lines, and thanks for coming up here, and I'm glad you decided to turn down their offer.
You have a lot of talent, ma'am. Good luck to you, Miss Burris.
Come back there and sit down.
Now then, to Idlewild Airport, and Bob and Ray remote broadcaster, Wally Blue.
The old Wally Blue, winner of the Lewis Grapsy Dixon Award, greeting you from the overseas waiting room here at Idlewild, and ready with our portable microphone to chat with some of the people coming and going by airplane. How about you, sir? Can
How
we
do
speak
do?
To you first?
Yes.
And where are you from?
I'm from London.
London, England?
London, New Hampshire.
Oh, I didn't think you you sounded too British.
I'm not British.
Where are you bound for, or are you just leaving?
I'm leaving from Idlewild now. I'm going overseas.
Whereabouts? London, England?
No, I'm going to Paris, France. And then from there, I'm going to Rome, Italy. And then from there, I'm going up to Geneva, Switzerland. And to London, England. And then I'm going to Dublin, Ireland.
Sounds like a wonderful itinerary you have there, sir, and I hope you have a great deal of fun on your flight.
Well, it won't be much fun at all. I have many serious things that I have to get done on this trip. And
you're going for business, that are you?
More or less business. See, I'm in the promotional business, Mr. Ballou. You see, what I want to do is go overseas and introduce tuna over there for various holidays. Like in this country, you have your traditional turkey for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I'd like to, for instance, in France, to institute, like, say, tuna fish for Bastille Day.
Really?
And then in England, for lilac time at Kew, kind of ring in a pizza pie.
I see. Well, you're hired by the Pizza Institute or the
Tuna Institute, that's right.
Well, I hope if you tried this in this country, you've stayed together your leave.
I tried it for a little while in this country, but with disastrous results. So I thought maybe I'd better change my modus operandi.
Well, what would be the... Yes, I would, before I get on that plane.
Yeah, well, I spilled something there.
What would be the traditional Thanksgiving Day dinner in England, say?
Oh, I think they have the... Well, they don't have Thanksgiving there. They don't have that.
Well, they don't have that.
Then. No.
Well, how about 4th of July in France, then?
Well, in 4th of July in France...
I know they have a 4th of July in France.
Yes, it's between the...
3rd and the
5th. 5th, right.
Well, what do they eat on the 4th of July?
Well, a lot of them I know sit down to a good meal of truffles and wine and bread.
You'd rather they'd be eating tuna fish or pizza, huh?
Right. Those are the two products I'm interested in.
Lots of luck to you, sir.
The way you said that, I doubt it.
Very glad that you spoke to us on this, our first interview from the airport. And do we have time, engineer, for one more if I have enough wire?
No, you don't, Wally.
Flaming, would you come over here, please? Ladies and gentlemen, one of the greatest acts to come out of the circus world, and one of the most exciting ones, certainly, that we've ever seen, Flaming Bombadine. After we talk a little bit, we would like to have you demonstrate your wonderful act.
Well, Bob, you know, I can't be shot out of a cannon here. So what we've gone ahead and done is to take a trash can and remove the bottom, and... I'll kind of come shooting out of that, and I have, I think, just enough of a charge to carry me just to the end of the studio.
Use a light to charge in a thing like this. How did you ever get started being shot out of a cannon? I've often wondered that about you people.
Well, I started being shot out of a flintlock rifle, Bob, when I was a kid, and it just naturally happened. I worked out of a mortar for a while, and then the bigger I got, the heavier I got, the more of a cannon I needed. Bigger bore.
Right. At the current time, Flaming Bombadine is the star of the Stutz Brothers Circus, I'm told. Tell us something about the actual work of being fired out of a cannon.
Well, Bob, I have these specially made shoes in which I can put a small charge of dynamite.
Uh-huh.
Now, we light the fuse.
Yeah.
And I'll come shooting out of this trash can. I think, though, for safety's sake here, and as much as I don't have the helmet, that if you would open that door and fire into the studio so that in case I have too much of a charge in my fuse, I'll go through the door and then out into the hall and more or less just...
By that time, you will have slowed down.
Slowed down.
What do you think about when you're flying through the air like you're going to be doing in just a few seconds?
Well, Bob, I don't know. It's awfully hard to describe feeling like that. You know, the first thing that happens to you is your sense of hearing is knocked out from the charge. And you're going at such a tremendous rate of speed that...
Can't hear the applause.
Can't hear the applause. You can't see anybody. And there's a tremendous, awfully hard... Have you ever been shot out of a cannon?
No.
Well, something like that.
I guess that's the best approach we can come to. Now, will you go over and crawl in the trash can there with your shoes? We have the door open.
You open the door, will you?
Yes, crawl open, right.
All right, well, now I'm getting down here.
Check everything's
ready. And I'm all set anytime you want to... Like
all right, how about I count three and we'll let her go, huh?
All right.
And lots of luck, Flaming Bombadine. And thank you in advance for giving us this
All right,
time
now.
One, two, three.
Oh, I'm awfully sorry.
Wembley Webster just came in, ladies and gentlemen.
And I closed the door. I didn't know that a fellow was going to be shot out of the cannon.
He was right on the swing out the door.
Oh.
He was slowing down. Flaming?
Why?
I want you to meet Webley Webster, one of the greatest little guys in show business.
Is he the fellow who closed the door?
Yeah. Well, he came in.
He's a bird brain, if you ask me.
Webb, this is Flaming Bombadine.
How do you do, Flaming? I've heard so much about you before. I bet that hurt, huh?
He went headlong into that
that heavy door out there.
I'm going to sit down for a little while.
I think maybe you're good. You have a headache or anything?
Yeah. Mostly your ass.
Well, Flaming, all right? I think he is. Would you like to sit down on the Bob and Ray couch, Flaming? It might be more comfortable.
Flaming.
Hello, this is your host, Emery Wheeler, here on Show Business Corner. And our guest today is network producer Morton Peters, noted for his successful television series, Wackity Gun. Hi, Mort.
Hello, Emery.
Mort, most people are aware of the success of Wackity Gun, but for those who aren't, would you mind, Mort?
Well, not at all. Wackity Gun is the story of Wild Bill Harlow, the man who cleaned up Honolulu.
Well, gosh, you really went way out west on that one, didn't you?
I would say so, Emery.
Mort, with WG, the success it is...
What's WG?
A Wackity Gun. I met some of the kids who worked on the series, and that's what they called it, WG. Isn't that done quite a bit in show business? I mean, to save time.
Well, some people do that, Emery. However, Wackity Gun isn't an excessively long title, and it's my understanding people who work on the shows which have longer titles do shorten them up in the way you suggested.
Yeah, well, at any rate, it's a successful show, and I'm sure the network is after you to develop some new westerns, right?
Yes, they are, Emery. The network is after me to develop some new westerns.
Have any ideas, Mort?
Well, the trend in westerns seems to be moving toward the more, let's call it the esoteric kind of cowboy.
You mean the finely caparisoned cowboy?
That's about what I mean. Guy who can quote things.
Have you had any luck on the project, Mort?
Well, I've seen some scripts, and there are a few I'm interested in. I was particularly taken by a script one writer submitted that was called Oscar Wilde Goes West.
Gee, judging by the title, it would seem to be a good idea.
I thought so, too, but it turned out to be a sea story about Oscar Wilde's first trip to New York. Mm-hmm.
Any other scripts seem interesting at all?
Well, there's the first Ivy League cowboy, the Seersucker Kid, first man to introduce bad manners to the Old West.
That sounds promising.
Well, you seem to be a good sounding board, Emery. Tell me, how much damage can one man inflict on another man with a fraternity pin?
Well, if it's a large fraternity pin, I suppose...
No, I don't think I'm going to waste any more time on the Seersucker Kid.
Well, you've been a lot of years in the business, Mort. You know best, of course.
That's right. I've got too many others I'm considering anyway. For instance, there's Arnold of Paris, the fighting hairdresser. The Old West's first beautician.
Hey, that sounds promising.
It is. The thing I like about it, we wouldn't have too much trouble getting a beautician into scrapes each week, not in the Old West. But as yet, we haven't licked the problem of how he's going to get out of those scrapes.
But
get that set up, then we'll be in pretty good shape. Yeah,
well, you will. Network television producer Mort Peters, because perplexing problems are part of your life. And thank you for being with us.
We said we're going to have a weekend feature, and that's what we're going to do now as we call in another of the Bob and Ray staff. Who is somewhere in Texas, Scott Keogh. I wonder if you can hear me, Scott, with your man on the road. Weekend helicopter report, please come in.
Hi, Bob. Yeah, everything is in good shape here. I'm parked on route to 64 just outside of Houston, Texas, here in the Bob and Ray convertible.
That's great country down there, Scott.
Yes, it is. It's a very interesting country, Bob, and we have a full report on the helicopter situation for you.
Well, how is it there right at the moment?
It's very heavy in the sky southbound. I think probably have 15 to 20 helicopters go by here in the last 15 minutes.
Well, I can hear some of them overhead there. They sound pretty low.
There's a slight tie-up westbound at the Sky Toll House, where there are several helicopters backing up there. I would suggest to anyone in a private plane to bypass that.
Do you find that the weather is good at the moment?
The weather's very good, Bob. It looks like we're going to have a delightful weekend.
Yeah, that'll probably...
Everyone is taken to the air.
Yes, that'll mean the sky will be full of the whirling birds there, as they call them. Do they seem to be clearing up the situation that you mentioned a moment ago?
No, if anything, it's getting a little more complicated and cluttered. I notice now Yeah, here comes the state police trooper in his helicopter with the flashing lights firing. He's going up to see. I think what's happened up ahead, southbound, is one of the helicopter's engines has boiled over.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, it's only a two-lane sky
road. Well, if they get tied up the way you've described, I can understand how an engine could heat up that way.
Well, that's what's happening, Bob. So I would advise, I think it's going to clear up now. Yes, they're throwing up a skyhook.
Oh, good.
And they're going to pull the immobilized helicopter off to the side into the other part
Fine.
Of the sky.
Well, then, do you have any final word of advice to helicopter people down that way?
Yes, I would. I would remind them all that the airwaves are filled with helicopters this weekend, and that unless they absolutely have to use their helicopter, don't do it. And again, the reminder that the traffic is heavy southbound and high up at the Sky Toll House.
Thanks very much for more fine reporting, Scott Keogh, and we'll see you again next week.
Thank you, Bob, and 30.
What?
You said thank you and 30.
What do you mean by that?
I don't know. Does that mean, is it? Say something like that? I don't know.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. You know,
we kind of decided we were missing something in some of the things we were doing here, that the audience hasn't been reacting the way they should.
That's right. So we went right out and hired a laugh machine and had all the laughs on it, and it's controlled electronically.
I think it'll punch up a lot of the humor that lies latent.
Not only that, but you can take a dull script and make it sound hilarious with this particular tape we have. And we've asked Jester Hansworth Frisbee to write all our dramatic type thing, and he said he'd write us a home type show, and we could use this tape and see how it works out. How's that for an idea?
That's fine. We got a good theme for it, so I think without further ado, we should get to it.
All right, let's try it out.
And it's time now for Warm Situation Comedy as we present At Home with the Voting Merchant, a mature and democratic blending of young and old. A family where unilateral decisions are abhorred.
Matt, Joseph smashed your car this afternoon, ran it right through the plate glass window at Nelson's drugstore.
Well, Joseph, I suppose there's a reason for all that.
Sure, Dad. I did it on a bet. I won 50 cents.
Well, at least there was a reason.
I think you should censor the boy. Mr. Nelson called and said that the damage amounted to $759. And that's more than 50 cents.
Yeah, I suppose $759 is more than 50 cents.
Yes, it is.
Well, let's get on with the voting. We'll start with you, Cora. Do you think Joseph should be punished for his escapade?
Yes, I do. That's my vote.
All right, that's one against you, Joseph. And what's your vote, Cora, too?
Well, I'll vote against my brother anytime. He's stuck up and somewhat of a skunk.
Well, Joseph, things aren't going too well for you here at the Murchison voting table. One more vote against you, and you're in for a censure.
Well, I got a chance if you don't vote against me, Dad. I want you to know I put the 50 cents I won in the Murchison family kitty.
Joseph, I didn't know that. I don't think your mother and Cora Sue knew it either. Now, do either of you want to change your vote?
No.
No.
Ah, see what a stinky family.
Joseph, I'm going to have to vote against you, too.
That's good.
I think we nailed him good.
Well, what are you going to do to me? I'm sure it'll be something for my own good.
Well, Mother and I talked it over before the vote, and we decided to take away a few privileges.
That's right, Joseph. Your father and I have decided it might be a good thing if you worked on an assembly line for 2 or 3 years.
What do you think of that decision, Cora Sue? Is it fair?
I think it's fair. Can I get on the phone and tell the kids about it?
Certainly, Cora Sue.
Well, don't stay on too long, though, Cora Sue. We may have to vote on you, too, if you do that.
Son, when you come back from that assembly line, you'll have a much better understanding of automobiles.
Well, then I'm glad I'm going. Can I finish my dinner now?
Not until we vote on it, Joseph.
So it goes with the voting Murchison, the mature and democratic family next door. hello again, sports fans. This is Biff Burns in the Biff Burns Sports Room, ready to interview another outstanding figure in the sports world. In this case, our old friend Bill Hockey of the Indiana Mustangs, funky shortstop, who just this past week was sent down to the minors. Bill, I wonder if you could give a little of the background as to how your career seems to be going downhill at this point.
Well, I don't know as I'd use that phrase to describe my career, Biff. Going downhill. I don't like to think that that's what's happening to me.
Well, being kicked out of a top-flight team like the Mustangs and sent down there seems to me to be a little of a setback. How long were you with the Mustangs, Bill?
Well, I went to spring training with them this year, and they kept me up until they had to cut their roster back to 48. So to make room, they had to let me go.
Isn't it true, as a great many of the sports writers pointed out, that you suffered a lot of head colds?
Well, I seem to have been
kept
playing
out of spring training quite a bit, didn't it?
I think that's probably one of the biggest reasons why I didn't stick with the team, because of all my colds. And I have sore feet. I can't run very well. And my hitting has been off this year.
What was your average when you left the Mustang?
Oh, 58.
58. You spoke of sore feet. I know the last game I saw you play in, you fell down several times.
Well, oddly enough, you wouldn't think this would happen, but I had my right shoe on my left foot and my left spike on my right foot. You wouldn't believe that could happen, but...
I do, in your case, Bill, I do believe it did happen because I saw it with my own eyes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a rainy day, and we didn't know whether the game was going to be played or not, and the manager said, get in the uniform. Hurry out in the field, so that's what happened.
You look pretty awkward out there, I will say that for
you. Thank you.
Now, there was one outstanding play you made this past season, the a running backhand catch. That was off the bat of who?
That was hit by Laugh and Lou Jolly of the St. Paul team. He got a hold of a high outside pitch there, and it was just a question whether it had the wings to get over the fence. So I backed up for it. And
never dreaming you'd be able to snag it, huh?
That's right. And it was probably one of the most, the nicest catch I think I ever made.
Yes, but of course you dropped it after the catch and the run scored, and it was the one run that won the game. I see
that's
our
right.
time is running a little bit short, but for all of the kids listening in, do you have any advice on how to turn out to be a ball player like yourself?
Well, I'd say any kid who wanted to grow up and be a major league ball player best is to, every time he sees a ball, pick up that baseball, throw that ball, get to know that ball.
Now the time
handle
is really out there. I want to thank
ball.
You, Bill, for dropping
will
by
you,
today.
When you grow up,
sports
you're going to be holding on to a ball.
This
you're
is
going to be
playing
fairly.
Until
barely.
Next time, so long.
You'll be a ball.
Yes.
Painter distributor right now, the painters are here.
The painters are here? What do you mean?
Okay. Come on in, fellas. Let's go. Let's get it done, huh?
Paint in the
we don't have too much time.
Yeah, this has to be the blue wall there. It's going to be the blue one.
I think the one that has the big B written on it.
Well, they can't begin just in the middle
can't
of the show.
Begin
like
they're doing it.
I know it, but you can't. Can you gentlemen wait and for about 5 minutes?
Where do I put the battleship gray?
Webb, are you a painter?
I'm in charge of painting and maintenance here now.
Well, how did that happen? I thought you
were our
book reviewer.
Well, Bob, you haven't given me a book to review. You haven't given me any... Go right ahead. Go on, Ingeborg.
Yeah, this is going to be the blue wall over here, is it?
That's right. The one's the gray, and the others are the battleship gray.
Yeah, sure, all right. I guess I'm busy with it.
Be careful up there, Ingeborg.
Yeah, watch it. Look. Yeah, I've seen that bucket of white things all over there.
You don't suppose you're going to leave the floor that way, Webb?
No, are you going to clean that all that up, aren't you?
That's that very quick drying paint.
Oh, it's dried already, I see.
Ingeborg, are you stuck?
Hey, I'm standing right in the middle of it here.
You're really stuck right to the floor.
Yes, my foot, please.
Wait a minute. How do we call emergency?
Do they have one here?
I think so. He's really struck badly.
Yes, sure, I am.
Don't worry, Ingemar. Don't worry.
You don't have a sandwich on you, do you?
Hello, emergency.
Hello, Barbara. Yeah. Ray. You have a painter stuck to the floor here, and it's disrupting a program already in progress. Huh?
Yeah. What
do we do? Can you help?
Yeah, we'll be up there. 26.
We just wanted to finish the show in a, you know, in a big finish way, and yeah. We can't with him stuck.
Studio, what is it again?
21st.
Okay.
All right, they're going to come up with.
Wait a second, I have an idea. Could you throw, do we have a tarpaulin that they cover the pianos with? Throw it over.
There's one over there on the piano.
Well, throw it over Ingeborg for now, because it bothers me.
It's hard to have to look at it.
Well, you don't mind, Ingeborg?
No, that's something that's older, isn't it?
Good.
All right. Where's the impersonator that was booked by Wilbur Connolly, the young squirt who works for us? That's you, I guess, sir, huh? It's only too long to talk to you. Just, what is it, line? All right, Webb, will you... Just...
All right. I'll stand still till the program's over. I'll wait for the emergency.
What is your line of show business entertainment, sir?
I'm a tree imitator.
You imitate trees?
That's right.
Do you do this on, television?
I do it on TV shows, small, intimate nightclubs. Takes me maybe 20, 30 minutes to do my act, depending on applause, encores, one thing or another.
I've never heard of an act of this sort. How many trees do you have in your repertoire?
Well, it takes me 8 months, really, of concentrated rehearsal and practice.
To get one down.
Imitation down perfect. I have maybe 15 trees I can do for
15?
You.
15? That's quite a stable.
Well, I've been doing
what was the hardest time. One you ever learned?
I think the forsythia bush.
That's because of its gay, multicolored, yellow blossom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are you going to do for us here?
Well, I'd like to do the weeping willow, the very pathetic weeping willow.
All right, here is Phil Fish, tree impersonator with the weeping willow. Like that, audience? Yes, they do. Very good. I wish you had time for more. But I see emergency is coming in the studio now. Thank you very much, Phil. Maybe we'll have a few more of your
impressions. Good, wonderful. Thank you. He's over under the top hall.
Here with us in our little booth is, what is it, Kevin Pertwee?
No, Perley.
Perley, I'm sorry, sir. May I call you Kevin?
Kevin Berkeley, Perley.
Well, Berkeley, you're here because you have an unusual business.
Well, that's right. We have been...
Talk to you.
Go ahead.
We'd like to talk to you.
We have been in this business for the past 3 or 4 years. The whole thing boils down to the fact that we are in the motion picture business. We have our studios in Long Island.
I'm not bored, sir. I'm closing my eyes because I'm a little tired.
Oh. And we have our studios on Long Island, and we are producing at the present time 4 complete films a week for television.
Mm-hmm. You're then a producer of films for television.
Well, yes, but they are old films.
Oh, you mean this is for late-night viewing?
Yes. They came to the decision a few years ago that they were going to run out of legitimate old films, and they contacted me, one of the large networks, and said, could I make something that would look like the old films, which had proved so successful?
Well, how do you go about that, sir?
Well, there are several different ways. We use a very cheap grade of film, for one thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And,
overexpose it.
We overexpose it, and we have a machine that puts scratches into it. I think one of the outstanding, and light spots, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I brought along a recording. We use this when we're doing the soundtrack, which we dub in, incidentally, later, and run it so that the lips don't move along with the sound. We run this sound.
It's completely out of sync. Uh-huh.
This is the sound of a heavy generator. It runs in the background of all of the dialogue.
Well, I think I've enjoyed some of your work before, sir.
Oh, you've no doubt seen it, although it's hard to tell nowadays our product from some of our
competitors. I believe we can stop that generator now.
Yes. I'm so used to hearing it when I talk.
What do we have to look forward to in old pictures?
We've got
what? What other defects can we look forward to?
Well, we're working on them all the time. I don't like to brag, but I think we have just about the worst product that anyone in the business does. I don't think any of the other old filmmakers can come up to our standards.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's something to be proud of, sir, and I know that our listeners are thrilled to know that there is such a person thinking of them and working for them.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to have this opportunity to talk to all of your listeners.
And on this very happy note,
We've been speaking here with Kevin. What was it again?
Burkless Pearly.
Are you going into the audience?
I thought so. I'll take this microphone, get down and talk to some of the folks. Now, let's see. No, no, now, please. No, none of that. No, no, please. Him, all right.
Yes, sir.
What's your name?
Clifton Word Linger.
Clifton Word Linger. And,
I'm a pizza flipper at the Circular Food Restaurant on 42nd Street. You from New York?
Are you from New York?
No, sir? I'm not.
No.
Where are you from? Menlo Park, New Jersey.
Menlo Park, New Jersey. Isn't that the home of Thomas A. Edison, the wizard of Menlo Park?
Yeah. Although in his younger days, he wasn't known as a wizard.
Well, I guess a person has to be quite a bit before he's known as a wizard.
That's right. That's the reason you won't find too many young wizards around these days.
Well, Edison certainly was a garden.
It's no good to keep these things bottled up. Actually, it's the first time in years I've talked about him, and I feel a bit better for doing it.
I'll tell you what I remember about him. He had those classic Grecian features, as I remember, and gnarled hands, and this ageless kind of dignity that he had.
Well, I think we'd all have to say that the man was touched by greatness.
Well, I don't know if you know this, sir, but in those days, your uncle was often compared to Ben Turpin.
I didn't know that, no.
Well, your uncle was a modest man, and he probably didn't want to tell you.
Another measure of his greatness.
Yes. He had the deep, rich quality of burnished brass. Incidentally, he was a personal friend of Bennett Sturt in those days.
I had heard that, and it's good to have it confirmed.
Well, time's running out, sir, so I'd like to ask you, has there been any recent or radical change in pizza flipping since your uncle said?
Well, yes, we don't flip the pizzas as high as they used to in the old days. Too many pizza snatchers around.
And a pizza snatcher is a person who grabs the descending pizza before it lands and runs off the air without paying.
Yeah, even when we throw them up as little as 2 feet, we have to elbow our way in there to grab them.
Well, that's a very unusual situation, and you've been a very unusual guest. Clifton Wordlinger, nephew of Joseph Hanover, former pizza great. Thank you. As we left Bob and Ray yesterday, you'll recall that Bob was down in the audience talking with a charming woman. He's back there today with that very same person. Bob, come in, please.
Thanks for sending it over to me, Ray Goulding. And, ma'am, did you have a pleasant stay at the Bob and Ray Hotel last night?
It was very nice.
Didn't you find it lived up to all of your expectations?
It wasn't as bad as I thought, although I would suggest that you put blankets in one of those bureau drawers.
Yeah.
I had to get up at night. It was chilly.
It's been unusually cool for this month.
Yes, I had to sew on the raincoat. Over the bed.
Well,
keep me warm. But other than that, you don't have hot water. I don't know if you know that.
Well, did you have the continental breakfast this morning? The donut and coffee?
Man wouldn't give it to me. I got down there about 20 minutes to 10.
Oh, no.
The old sergeant just said, nope,
you
nope,
had it before 9 o'clock,
said,
you know. Tell me, you sent on your card, and the reason we held you over here in the audience was because you had such an interesting card.
Yeah.
It says that you're a lady homemaker. Is that right?
That's right. My name is Margot Chakalusengard.
What could I call you for short?
Margo.
I'll never remember that.
Margo.
Margo, where do you make your home?
Well, I'm making my home right now. It's on a 2-acre plot in Acton, Massachusetts.
Uh-huh.
Find
an old farmhouse or something?
No, I just found a lovely little piece of property there. It used to be an apple orchard, and I'm saving many of the trees. I'm going to put up a little house there.
Are you doing this yourself?
Good level. Match my personality.
You're doing this yourself, or what? Do you have help?
Well, I'm sorry. I wasn't
you have a crew working up there for you?
No, I do it myself. I'm a true homemaker.
Really, really going at it.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, I am.
Well,
wonderful.
Why did they pick you? I don't see anything particularly interesting.
Well, I was in movies years ago.
Oh, I guess that was it. You were in silent pictures?
Well, I was an engineer for many
is
years.
Is that so?
Yes. And then I got caught in a stampede scene,
mm-hmm.
and I've been playing old lady parts ever since.
Well, Margo, it's been a wonderful pleasure to chat with you, and I hope that the rest of your visit will be as pleasant as this first part has been.
All right, well, thank you very much, gentlemen.
I'm going out into the audience now to chat with some of the people visiting here today. I'm
going to move over to another part of the other side of the audience, across the aisle.
Now,
No,
so let me take some quick. All right. Let me ask a question. Do we have anyone in the audience with talent that they'd like to display? Lester McCack.
Yes.
McCack, what kind of a name is that?
Oh, it's kind of dark and Peruvian.
I guess some kind of a combination.
Something like that. Yeah? I don't know. I remember my grandparents discussed one night, but...
They were disgusted one night by what?
No, they were discussing it.
Oh.
And I couldn't make much head or tail out of it.
Well, now, you said... Yes. You said on your card that you are a tap dancer. Don't
well, I'm a time to be.
Oh, you haven't become a professional yet.
No, not yet, no. But
do you appear anywhere tap dancing?
Well, I'll get up maybe down at the lodge. Perhaps, if I'm invited, but not too much. I do it mostly for my own enjoyment at home or on a subway. Oftentimes, I get a seat in the subway that way. The doors swing open, and I get up on tap dancing.
Sure.
I have that whole car all by myself.
I can imagine.
They all just file right out of it.
Well, now our audience loves to have its own members show their talents, no matter how minuscule it may be. And I think right now, I say our audience members love to see one another get up here and perform. No matter whether they have talent or not.
Oh, I'd like to say something about minuscule, because I'm Scott.
Oh, no. Well, let's hear you give us a little example of your tap dancing. Mr. Music, would you give him a little background, please?
Well,
pretty good. Six steps on that line.
Listen.
Remember, the number to call is like something too. I'll be checking through for more control. How long is this go on, Lester? I'm getting a little bit bored with it at this point.
Oh, I can find
it. Do you have a big finish?
I don't know how to finish it.
I wouldn't advise you to go into this professionally, but...
Well, thanks a lot.
Sorry, I hope we helped you on your way to stardom.
Never can tell, but if I reach stardom, I'll never forget who Danny was back.
Who?
You, fellas.
Oh. Well, if you get there, you should have fun.
Not bad when you think of it. Go down to the audience and find talent. You're sitting there like that. Very unusual and wonderful.